In this latest edition of the TWBC podcast, we are at season's end at the 2022 Miami Pro, and we're talking to Regina Jaquess next.
The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Skiing. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. I am Tony Lightfoot, and I thank you for your continued support of this broadcast. All right, then, we are at season's end, the Miami Pro 2022, and it has been a rather interesting season for the skier whom I'm interviewing right now, multiple-time world champion, multiple-time world record holder, one of the most storied athletes of all time. It is none other than Regina Jaquess. How are you doing?
Well, thanks for the introduction. That was awesome. I'm doing great. We are down here at our last Pro Slalom event at the Miami Pro Slalom and looking forward to the weekend.
Okay, so last time we got to interview in this format, the podcast, the TWBC podcast, was the 21st of April, 2021. What happened a week later?
Oh, that was 16 months later from now. I tore my ACL and have been on a comeback ever since that day. So, been a brutal process and a lot of physical therapy and mental struggles and ups and downs, but had a lot of people on my crew and having my back and getting back on my slalom ski, and then just recently back on the jump ski, and then also I just did my first overall tournament last weekend at Jarrett's world overall tour that he has done. So
yes, indeed, he's doing very, very well with that, and the overall performance is overall starting to shine again. I suspect, you know, I mean certainly among the men and the women are coming up as well to reestablish their credentials in the overall competition. You know, a lot has been said about overall, you know, I mean, in its current format, in the World Championships have been decided basically on the separate events that are skied. But once upon a long ago, the World Overall Championship was decided as a separate event on the very last day.
I've won that world before doing it that format that in China.
Yes, in Tianjin in 2003.
Exactly.
Yes. So obviously you've experienced highs and lows in both. So what? Which one would you prefer? Would you prefer it to be settled on the separate events or as its own standalone competition?
That's a hard one to say. I mean, then if you're an overall skier, you get into the finals of all three events at the world, and then you have to do a whole nother three events. That's nine sets in one event. That gets a little much. You almost become a sitting duck, too, for one of those events to not work out for you. There's really no good answer unless you just did a separate worlds for overall.
Indeed. And I mean, you're certainly one of the best overall skiers, one of the greatest overall skiers of all time. But I mean, a lot of people more readily know you for your exploits out there on the slalom ski, multiple time world record holder, multiple time world champion. Now, you miraculously, I mean, I can't find a better word for it. Miraculously, less than 6 months post-op last season.
Four months.
I said less than 6 months. I didn't quite know the exact month count, but thank you very much for doing that, just me.
I was counting the days.
You were counting the days. What were you ticking them off on the calendar?
Mental checks, you know.
Just mental checks. Yeah. You know, you probably had
day
a
day one, I'm going to die. Day two, still feel like I'm dying.
Okay, so you probably had a calendar on the backside of the door at your pharmacy, no doubt.
Checking it off. Yeah, no, I came back in 4 months, and that was definitely due to the protocol that was set by Dr. Kane with the Andrews Sports Medicine up in Birmingham, Alabama. So he was the one that actually pushed me to get back on the water and pushed me to get back into my first tournament. And I thought he was absolutely crazy because I was like, I can't even hardly put my shoe on. And yet you want me to go put my slalom ski on. And now you want me to go enter a tournament. But if you watch all the football players, all the NFL players, this is the new standard that they've set. It's that 4 months back. It's a struggle. It is a lot of mental issues that go through your head. And it wasn't like I was pain-free. I mean, that whole last year and even in the beginning of this year, and sometimes I still feel it, you know, I'm only like 16 months out. You know, you still have a little difficulties with it, but no, I was in good hands, and I have a really amazing team that supports me and all my sponsors, so that's why I got back.
But that's the thing, like choosing like the surgeon and the support staff, you know, is highly crucial. I mean, you mentioned the Andrew Sports Medicine Institute over in Birmingham, Alabama. Now this is the company that is basically on the speed dial of every major agent in the NFL, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if they see their player going down, first call is to Andrew, second call is to the nearest airport to get a private flight out.
Yep.
And all of that kind of stuff comes in, you know. So, I mean, it's vitally crucial to have that happen, you know, because most... I suspect the most surgeons in that kind of context will probably err on the side of caution, but yet... you had someone that was like egging you on and pushing you forward, you know, and like pushing you back onto that ski.
Yeah, no, he really did. And I'm so thankful that he did, because one of the biggest things about ACL injuries or just knee injuries in general, any injury, but, you know, just really this ACL, it's more a mental comeback as well. And it's not really ever, you know, thought or talked about. And that was kind of his reasoning for putting me back on that ski 4 months later, put me into a tournament, a pro event. My first one was the Malibu Open. And then a week later was Worlds. He wanted me back on that ski and back in the mental side of being in the competition, because he didn't want that to go away. He knew that when I got hurt, I was at the top of my game, and he wanted, you know, his whole goal was to make sure that I got back to being that person again.
Was sports PTSD ever mentioned? You know, because I mean, I spoke recently with Elizabeth Montavon Island, and I mean, she mentioned it on several occasions where it came down to the injury that she sustained in May of this season, and she was trying to push herself to get on top of the water, and even though she was healing fine, you know, upstairs she just didn't feel absolutely right with what she was doing, and you know, and it took a while for her to overcome that. Was that the case with you, or were you quite headstrong enough to begin to kind of suppress that?
Well, I think we all know I'm a little headstrong, but...
Yeah, yeah. Just ask your father.
Yeah. No, I mean, this was definitely something that you kind of have your ups and downs with it, but the hardest part, and you still think about it, that's why it was so vital for me to actually get back on the jump skis and go over the jump ramp and get on a trick ski. All those little things that some people are like, why are you ever going to do that again? Why are you wasting your time? You're the best slalom skier in the world. Don't do that. The thing is I can't become back to who I was until I get all those things over with, because I'll suppress the feeling of, oh well, I just am not going to do that because what if I get hurt again? And that's not how I ever was.
No overall skier will ever tell you that, right? no overall skier worth his salt is gonna say you're just better off slalom skiing, because they know that it's part of the full package. You know, I mean, it's like chopping one leg off. You
right.
Know?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Exactly. And I mean, getting back on my jumpers, and then also now recently, I haven't done it often, right? Like, I'm not attacking it hardcore. I'm still deficit in my quad. I know that. So I'm being smart about when I do it and everything. But it's mentally making things to where I'm not standing on the slalom dock and saying, man, my knee is a little sore today, so I wonder if I should even try to do this. It's like, okay, I can push through this. I've gone over a ramp now. I can push through this pain. The pain's just part of that whole
thing. Just suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah, suck it up, buttercup. No, I mean, it's just a process. Like, I think there will always be some pain with it, but I mean, when are we not in pain as skiers and overall skiers? It's just part of our part of the package. I mean, we're pushing our bodies to limits that we really shouldn't be at.
I could probably think of something where you'd be in pain with slalom lines. Yeah, because you just come off the water, right? And you were practicing with a slalom line that you don't typically work with, a little stiffer than normal, and yet you could feel every little bit of jolt from that line. Now, you typically ski on What is it? A master line. The optimized 2.0 or the regular mainline?
I do both. I like to practice with both the optimized and the mainline because you just really don't know what you're going to get at tournament. So I like to just be prepared. But the master line ropes are my go-to, and that's what I prefer, and that's what I'm used to. And you know, I think in slalom we have become so fine-tuned with everything from the boat and the zero off to our settings on our fins, and now to even the ropes, that we are connected. We have to figure out how we can be connected to the boat to be able to run through 39 off every round at the event, because that's what it's going to take to win.
Because I mean, you hear these expressions like spike in the boat, you know, just trying to get the ski ahead of the line, you know, and working with other elements. And I mean, the line has been overlooked for so long now. Now it's really starting to come to the forefront and a lot of people's thinking in preparation for these events. You kind of get a little bit lost in the shuffle, really. Yeah. When you say, I mean for those of you out there that are like wondering what we're talking about, line, a little bit of stretch, a little bit of load and all that kind of stuff, you know, it does make a huge difference when that line is like 2.5 feet inside the buoy.
Yeah, it does, especially when you're only 5'4". I think it's great, though. We're starting to see a lot of other companies come into play with building different ropes. I think that's just going to be the evolution of having a rope that is going to be the go-to rope eventually. You know, and hopefully Masterline will be able to take that by the reins and go with it and have a line that can be connected to the boat but still be light on that end of the line by both the driver and the skier, and the driver knows where the skier is the whole time and the skier knows where the driver is the whole time. That's the most optimal line that you could actually choose.
Now, one of your favorite sports outside of skiing is NASCAR, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
So, and you realize that one of the major rules is NASCAR is that each of the cars are essentially the same. Engine output, aerodynamics, all that kind of stuff. So to reference a line in Days of Thunder, you're not competing against other cars, you're competing against other drivers. Now, should there be a set standard for slalom lines to at least make it easier for what skiers can plump for, so far as line stiffness, recoil, that kind of stuff, you know? So at the very least, you know what to expect, you know, when you come off the buoy and you're waiting for that jolt. It's not going to spring you or really, really kick on you.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely needs to be some standards in place for strengthening and stiffness and load, which there are already in place. Recoil really doesn't ever get looked at too much, which is a bigger factor, I think, than any of them. And at the same time, on that same flip of a coin, you know, I don't think that it's not very necessary unless you're at our line lengths. The everyday skier just needs a $25 rope. Mm-hmm. So we don't need to get into trying to figure out this optimized line that is going to cost our people that we want coming into our sport that much money. Like, we need something also on the flip side that's a $25, $35.
No one's going to run the course one day and jump on a good slalom ski the next, you know? I mean, right. You mean you've got to have somewhere in between, you know, to actually get you out, get you to where you are, to where you would like to be.
Yeah, and then once you figure it out, you kind of understand more of the concepts, and it's just like with our good skis, you know? You come to us once you're ready to take that next step and get the customized ski, get your extra 6 buoys that we always can get you.
Yes, indeed. Always searching for more on the slalom ski. But let's talk about you jumping, because you surprised a lot of us. Seriously.
I surprised you.
Yeah, you surprised me.
That's interesting.
Yes.
That's hard to do.
Yeah. I try. And you flatter me way, way too much with that response. But so far as your jumping is concerned, I mean, I thought you were just going to have a cut in the pads in the Malibu Open. Boy, was I wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I contemplated cutting and passing. I did it once, and then I felt like my knee was pretty good. And I had gone over a couple times before. You know, I mean, like I said, I haven't really been pushing it. I don't want to overdo it by any means. And so it felt good, and I went after it. So it was great. It wasn't a huge distance, but it was a huge distance for me for coming back off my ACL. Just enough of that 153 float time to have that little adrenaline rush miss so much.
Indeed, indeed. I'm sure it was like extremely hard for you to kind of like suppress that urge, you know.
To go a little later, to go a little more speed. Yeah, no, you're it's hard to suppress that.
You like feeling, oh, okay, this feels nice. This feels. Oh, but I still got this bum knee here. Yeah. I mean, come on. I gotta play this somewhere in the middle.
Right.
But then with jumping, if you play it too cautiously, it's almost as bad as if you're trying to overstep.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a fine line. You got to attack, and that's part of the sport. I mean, we kind of all go into it. Doesn't matter what event you get on the dock, you kind of know the risk that you're taking. The possibility to get injured is always there. Yeah, it's a little more in jump, but it's also there in slalom. So you can't be cautious. You gotta go in and attack. You just gotta play it smart. So I'm trying to continue to do that for the rest of the season, and kind of maybe ride them and just get really good at riding my jumpers, so that hopefully I can kind of get a little bit closer to where I used to be on the jumpers.
What about tricks?
Yeah, I mean, right now I still have to wear my brace, so I have to wear it for twisting purposes. That's their biggest concern. So I have to be in that for 24 months, and it's really hard to do toes with that knee brace. So I'm doing it. It's just kind of
difficult with a
brace.
Because you have to learn to pull a different way with that knee brace, because if you're a trick skier that likes to extend their leg out before pulling it in for something like a toe-o type deal, you know, it requires a certain amount of flexibility.
Well, it's actually my ski leg.
Your ski leg.
So it's just the distance between when I want my legs to be a little closer, like on a reverse toe back, to go into toe wake back to back, toe five fronts, toe O's. It's just constantly hitting this knee brace, and it's not ever next to my leg, but I'm used to having that.
And so, also the rubbing of that knee, of your free foot against that knee.
Oh, yeah, it hurts.
It hurts.
But does it hurt, no gain, right?
Does it hurt any worse, like kicking your back foot in towards your front, binding and stubbing your toe?
Honestly, the last 16 months, I will never complain about being in pain again, I don't think, because that was the most brutal experience that I had after that, coming out of that surgery for the first week. So, no, there's really not that much pain anymore in my life, I don't feel like. I mean, I'm sure there can be worse, but that was brutal. It kind of gives you a whole nother level of appreciation for people that have gone through knee surgeries and come back. And, you know, it's tough.
Indeed, indeed. And obviously, you have to have a great support system. I mean, the folks at Emerald Coast Compound and Pharmacy.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
The
greatest compound pharmacy in the world.
There you go. Yeah.
There we go.
And no, all my techs and all my, you know, I mean, just their family too there. So our lead tech, she's, you know, very sport oriented as well, did volleyball her whole career. She's had three daughters, and all three of them had knee surgery, so she was pretty accustomed to, I think I was like her 27th knee surgery she had been through. So I would try to push the limits. I'd try to walk or climb over stuff, and she would just give me that mama bear stare, and I would just, I'll just sit nice. That's probably what I need to do, huh? So, I mean, it's those little things that just add up over time, just not pushing it. When we're athletes, we think we should be able to speed the process up, and in fact, we are. We're at 4 months post-op. That is speeding this up, but it still takes time for it to heal, and that's just the most frustrating part.
And having some great coaching helps as well. I mean, because I mean, you've worked with some of the best coaches and the best advice out there, you know. And I mean, one name springs to my mind, you know, without the revealing too much bias, Jay Bennett. You know,
yeah.
I live in Zachary, Louisiana, and that's where ski school is at.
Right.
You know,
been
and
over
you do
there often.
Yes, indeed. And you continue to make the odd journey out there, you know,
to
train with him. And you skied in the record tournament just recently, of course.
Yes. That kind of gave me the motivation to go to the overall tournament. But no, Jay's been very instrumental in not just my career, but all of our careers. You know, he's kind of helped build the jumping and become such an instrumental person in pushing jump and men's jump and women's jump. But he's great in all three events as well. So yeah, the journey over is great because you get such great quality with him and the whole staff and the family. It's just a great experience every time you go there.
All right, then. So now we're at the end of the season. You obviously got this competition coming up, the Miami Pro. You're obviously focused in for that for the time being. But what about next year? We know that World Championships next year is going to be in Lake County.
Yeah, I'm excited. I was actually really excited when the first time around when it was there last year or a year and a half ago before I got injured. So I really am going to take a complete different approach because last time it was there, I was excited. It was in the U.S. for the first time since, I think, 84. And I was prepared for all three events. Everything was going great. And then I tore my ACL. So I'm just going to take it 1 month at a time and hope that I can do all three events and go from there. But I'm not going to be as jacked up as I was before. I just am going to be thankful that I am skiing and I'm able to do all three events again.
All right, then. So, we talk quite at length about skiing and stuff like that. So what are your other interests aside from skiing? You know, I mean, because everyone knows you for this. There's like superb skiing athlete, but do you do anything, you know, like, I don't know, jogging along the beach, playing pickleball or anything like that? Or,
well, I haven't jogged or ran for a while since my 16 months ago. But no, I mean, I live in a cool place. You know, I'm in a little beach town in Santa Rosa Beach. The compounding pharmacy, Emerald Coast Compounding Pharmacy, takes a lot of my time, and then skiing. But when I can, I just love to be at the beach, take in the salt life, take in the... I have a chocolate lab. My sister has a Dalmatian. My parents have a black lab. So we'll take them out, run them on the beach, run them in the backyard. Just a lot of just... normal stuff that people do, that's a day-to-day life that, you know, you don't really get to do because you get so hustled up in the daily grind to do everything you need to do to become, you know, a professional athlete, and then to also have the job on the side. So when you can take the downtime and just do the daily things, you know, just, I mean, I drive to work and I am literally 0.2 miles from the ocean, and I don't really get to put my feet in the sand ever. So when you can, it's amazing. So I like to take those moments and just enjoy that life.
Indeed, indeed. And we certainly appreciate you being a part of this this podcast. So thank you very much again. We should be doing these a little bit more often, and certainly, you know, a lot more often than the 21st of April of last year.
But, well, yeah, I was a little out of commission.
Yeah, just a little out, but you're certainly back with a vengeance. But I'm going to leave you, yes, the opportunity now to thank and acknowledge those that have supported you between that time and now. So have at it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's been a long road. My mom, dad, sister, David, my brother-in-law, my family and my close friends that are my family. And then, of course, all my sponsors, they stuck through it. I mean, points in times when you just can't even walk and, you know, the doctor's yelling at you to walk normal and you're like, nobody ever told me how to walk normal, so I really don't know how to not walk normal. You know, and so you're like, how am I ever going to ski again? And my sponsors stuck right by my side. Malibu never wavered. And when I told them I was actually going to ski in Malibu Open, they were like, no, don't do that. Like, we need you to be back. Like, don't ski. Don't do that for us. And I was like, no, I'm doing it actually for me. But Malibu Boats, they never wavered. Good. They never, ever questioned it that I would not come back. And I mean, here I am thinking I'm going to lose everything. I'm never going to be back to skiing. Like, this is it. This is over. Because back in the day, ACL injuries were the end of it.
That were terminal.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, a 12-month rehab.
Right. And so you sit there and you're, you know, at the worst point in your life. You're depressed. You're just like, oh my gosh, everything's over. And, they never wavered. They always checked in, you know, and that was all of them. That was everybody from, you know, Mashline and Eagle to the PKB gloves that I wear. I mean, just, it was amazing the outreach of my sponsors that were constantly checking in. And then just, you know, Jay would check in and Chet Rayleigh would always check in on me. How you doing? And, you know, it's just those little moments of people calling and checking in on you meant so much because you were at points in time where you really didn't think things were going to turn around. Because everything's a baby step. You know, you never get this huge jump of, oh my gosh, I woke up and now I can like walk up the stairs. No, getting up a stair was horrible and it took forever to get up a stair. So those little outreaches that, you know, they did, and the unwavering support from all my sponsors, gosh, it was just something that I will always cherish and never forget, and hopefully won't ever have to go back and deal with that. But if somebody else does, I know when to call them.
Indeed, indeed. And if Tony Robbins ever retired, I can think of one person in my immediate vicinity that could definitely take over for him so far as motivational speaking is concerned. Indeed. Thank you very much, Regina Jaquist.
Thank you.
That was Regina Jaquist. I'm Tony Lightfoot. This is the latest edition of the TWBC podcast. And until the next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.